And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. It's good to be with you this Saturday morning. All right. I've got a ton of information here. I think I could talk the whole hour. But also, I don't want to not include you. I want you to feel free to call me and ask a question. I always find questions very interesting. I'm a kind of a curious person. I like to know what people think. But even more than that, I really believe that more and more people, they really want to do what they can to take good care of themselves. I realize I'm kind of in a unique position, so I get to hear all the horror stories of what went wrong, and nobody's perfect. You know, one of the things that I go through in my mind sometimes, I think, what does it take for us to learn how to do things right? You would think we would have enough practice to practice excellence, you know, rising to the benchmark of excellence in everything that we do. But a lot of times we fall short. We have to be reminded. And so for the people that are interested in taking care of themselves, I'm going to try to give you some good information this morning that hopefully you can take this and you can put it into practice. Well, I know you've heard me say before, I know I've mentioned this like probably 30 times over the years, I mean, not 30 times in one program. I hope I'm not that redundant. But nonetheless, one of the greatest predictors of all time, how long a human being is going to walk the earth, is how strong they are. One of the comments that I hear with some frequency, not every day, but I hear it with frequency, is the idea, I've become old overnight, and I can't believe I'm so weak. And what happened to my strength? I feel like I'm going to wobble and fall every time I stand up, or I'm going to lose my balance. Well, you understand the equation here. You've got to have strength. I came across this article, and that's where I'm kind of running with this. I have gone for walks through the woods, and I've seen where some of the old lumberjacks have come through and cut down trees, whether it's a pine tree or a hardwood tree. But a lot of times on the oaks or the hardwoods, that's where you see these mushrooms growing on the side of the cut, you know, tree trunk. You know, the tree stump. Well, there is a mushroom. Its common name is called turkey tail. I think the scientific name, and according to this article, is Coriolis versicolor. You may want to write that down. Well, what they show in this study, the title of the article is Turkey Tail Extract Turns Ordinary Muscle into Super Muscle. Now, I don't know where you are age-wise, but you know that as you age, things change. It is not as easy when you're 60 as when compared to being 16 years old. Are you kidding me? You could have a 16-year-old young man eat 3 cheeseburgers and be full of muscle and a six pack, and within 30 minutes he's hungry for another one. He just, his metabolism is so efficient, and he can convert that protein right into muscle. Well, you can't do that when you're 60 years old. You just can't. Or when you're 70 or 80. Anyway, there is a supplement that you can purchase in health food stores, and obviously you can buy them online now. There's a mushroom that grows in forest. I've seen it many times myself, probably in some of the parks in the neighborhood. But it may actually prove to be extremely beneficial to increase both muscle strength and a human being's endurance. Well, what does that mean to you and I? That means we might become stronger physically. That's a bonus. That's a good thing. But you may have more endurance, more stamina. If you want to say it in reverse, less fatigue, less tiredness. Haven't you heard people say that I'm doing good to drag my carcass out of bed, and the first place I go is to the couch where I take my second nap of 2 or 3 hours before I can get up and have something to eat or go to the bathroom? Oh, man. Okay, the scientists from Taiwan write in the journal, what's the name of it? Here it is. International Journal of Medical Sciences. What they're doing is they're writing about a very unique mushroom. It's called turkey tail, or if you want to call it by its scientific name, Coriolis versicolor. Okay, here's a study right here. For 28 days, and by the way, 28 days, that's not really a long time to see if something's working. But that's what they were looking at. They said, we're going to give this 4 weeks. We're going to put it to the test. We're going to see what happens to these mice when we give them Coriolis versicolor every day. Now, here's what you can't see on the radio. You can't look at the graphs and the charts like I can. I really have the advantage on that. But I find these graphs and charts so interesting because what they do is they give some mice the Coriolis versicolor or turkey tail, and the other ones, they give them nothing. Okay, so here's what they did. Well, this is full disclosure. There's this company called Genpherm Biotechnology. They're the ones that made this extract right here. Or what I should say is they grew it in the form of turkey tail mushroom. They're not responsible for making turkey tail. Obviously, God is the creator. He's the one that made it. He made all these amazing things for us if we could only just learn how to use them. They say there's a polysaccharide called Crestin, Crestin. Now, I don't want anybody confused. You probably think I'm saying Crestor. No, I'm not saying Crestor. That's a drug that's used by physicians to lower one's cholesterol. This is not the same animal. Crestin is a polysaccharide that's found naturally occurring in turkey tail mushroom. Okay, here's the results right here. It says that, and by the way, the manufacturer, they weren't paid to sponsor the study. The Taiwanese government did that, but the company that provided the mushroom extract, they sold it to the researchers here. Okay, so as far as I know, no financial incentive. Anyway, here's the results right here. After the supplementation period, the researchers determined how much strength the mice could develop in their forepaws. How they did that, I haven't read that far. It's interesting, though. They also looked at how long the animals could keep swimming. I don't know if you know this, but they sell several mouse traps or rat traps that are basically a walk-the-plank type deal. So if you put peanut butter at the end of it, and you fill a 5-gallon bucket of water about halfway with water, and the rat jumps up on the walk the plank like on a pirate ship. He gets to the end, and he loses his grip and slides down while he's trying to get the peanut butter. Anyway, so they're trying to find out how long can a rat swim. I know one person that knows this information, but I'm telling you right now, a rat can swim for hours if they're young and they're motivated. Kind of think that's a cruel way to go. Anyway, so what they did was they wanted to find out when they gave them turkey tail extract or mushroom, how long could the rat swim? Okay. So what they found out was, now this part is, to me, is interesting. They gave what they called a low dose and they also gave a high dose. Folks, I can't really tell there's any difference between the mice consuming the low dose and those consuming the high dose. But here's the punchline, though. Yes, they were able to go a lot longer before they were worn out and they succumbed to drowning while they swam. Here, let me just cut to the chase. Here's the mechanism right here. In addition, I'm just quoting the researchers here, we found that Coriolis versicolor mycelia extract, that means it comes from a mushroom, it has an anti-fatigue activity. And how does it work, you say, or you ask? By decreasing serum lactate. I'm liking that. This is actually one of the hallmarks of cancer growing in the body. So if you go to the doctor and he does an enzyme test called LDH, lactate dehydrogenase, when that becomes elevated, that's a sign that you might have cancer cooking inside your body somewhere. And so there was a decrease in lactate. You know what that means? That means your muscles can work harder. They can do better than what they used to. There's less ammonia. Ammonia is what you see build up in the body when your liver is not working so hot. So like if somebody has a fatty liver or they have liver failure, well, that's not good. There's another enzyme that they measure called creatine kinase. So serum lactate was lower, ammonia was lower, creatine kinase was lower, post-exercise, thereby elevating exercise performance in mice, write researchers. Why am I telling you this stuff? Why am I telling you about turkey tail? Well, you don't have to be a genius. You just have to understand and agree to the idea. It takes energy to make everything work in the human body. Let me give the phone number out to the phone line. If you want to get in and call me on the phone, there's a phone line open. It's 903-589-8507. Okay, back to the topic. If you want your body, whether you say it's my organs, my cells, my tissues, all of me, you've got to be able to make more energy if you want to heal. One of the hallmarks of cancer that kind of grows out of control is low energy. There's a lot of ways you could say this, but what does cancer need to thrive and to grow? Number one, you got to have a low oxygen body. Not good. Not good. How do you get more oxygen? Well, this is not a difficult equation here. You have to either breathe more deeply, go for longer walks, exercise every day. Unfortunately, you know, human beings, we're all alike. Sometimes it takes a near-death experience or a severe crisis to convince a person that maybe now they should start exercising, because you need oxygen. It's the most precious element in all the universe. You can't really make it without it. So you've got to have energy if you want your body to rise to the occasion and heal any weakened tissue. You know what? Sometimes that's all I do throughout the day is I look for the area of weakness. What if somebody has very weak muscles and they're not getting enough oxygen? Well, you can't just give them a magic pill, except maybe it's called Coriolis versicolor or turkey tail. You understand what I'm saying. Okay, I'm kind of beating the topic to death, but you've got to get energy in your body if you want to heal. It doesn't really matter what the situation is. Just throw something at me here. What if you have too little blood flow that goes to the brain and you have microvascular changes that are leading toward dementia? What if you've had a stroke and you're not getting enough blood to that part of the brain? Well, there's only one solution. More oxygen and more energy. Does that make sense? Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, doctor.
Hey, thanks for turning the radio down.
Oh, yeah, I was walking out of the room. I've got a friend that takes Aquellus, and she's about 80, 82, 83.
I didn't catch that phrase you said. She takes what?
Aquellus.
What is that?
That medication that you were talking about.
I'm sorry, you've lost me on that one. Sometimes I just don't hear the right pronunciation. You mean what I'm talking about right now, the Coriolis?
No, the Aquellus.
Eliquis.
Eloquist.
I'm so sorry. I just need to put an L in front of the Q. Now it's Eloquist. Okay, yeah.
Anyway, she's a gardener for years. I mean, 40 years.
Oh, man.
And
excellent.
Has a beautiful garden in Tyler. And she has always been very active and, you know, walking 3 or 4 miles a day. And all of a sudden, she had a heart attack, and she's on Aquellus now. And she has, she doesn't know what medications or what supplements she can take safely.
Right.
he's always taken like turkey tail. And
has she really taken turkey tail?
Yeah.
Oh, well, man, that's great.
But she's not sure if she can take that with that medication she's taking.
You know, I don't have my herbal safety Bible in front of me, written by Dr. Simon Mills, but that's usually what I go to because it tells all the studies, all the interactions. I think it's called the Herbal Safety Guide. But I like it because it has all these studies like I would look at to tell me if they're safe or not. But what I can do is I can look that up and I can try to give you a response.
Okay.
Can I tell you what I just scribbled down on a sheet of paper while you were talking? I kind of like taking notes, and I like writing down because I think it helps me process and think. But I thought, if she's 82 and she's just had a heart attack, I'm kind of curious about two or three things right here. And do you mind if I just speak freely and we'll try to get back to, you know, what to take and how to take it?
Right.
Okay. One of the things that would be so curious to me, and I'm going to give you like about four or five things here. Number one, they've shown without a shadow of a doubt the role of what's called vitamin D3. It probably acts more like a hormone than anything else. But it's been shown that when that's an optimal range, the risk of a heart attack goes way, way down. And so let me just say it in a different way. When a person's lower in vitamin D3, and I realize she's a gardener, she's out in the sunshine, but every study is pointing toward a different idea now. It's saying that as we age, our ability to make and process and utilize vitamin D goes down. Do you know what that means to you and I? That means we need more as we age if we want to keep our heart in good working order. So I would be so curious to find out what our vitamin D3 levels are. That would be really intriguing to me. And so I would look at that and say, okay, if those are lower than, say, 50, she might be at a much significant risk of having heart issues. And I realize that doesn't directly answer your question, so let me jump into the next one right here.
Okay.
If I look at the latest studies on a mineral that the human being need or human body needs, it's called magnesium, and that's a pretty easy one for me to talk about because if you look at studies, most of the soil in America is very magnesium deficient. And so the more that they farm it, well, guess what happens? You just don't extract as much magnesium from the foods that are grown on soils that are depleted in magnesium. I mean, that makes sense, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the greatest roles of magnesium is making sure that your blood can actually saturate itself with more oxygen. And I tell you right now, oxygen, that's why a person has a heart attack. I know I'm making it sound simple, but if you've ever had a really, really bad Charlie horse in your calf muscle in the middle of the night, like if you turn over in bed and that sucker just totally clamps down on you, you're going to get up and dance a jig trying to make that cramp to go away, right?
Yep.
Well, that's what a heart attack is. It's just a big honking Charlie horse of the heart. You're not getting enough oxygen. That's what the two have in common. But magnesium, it has one of the most unique roles to play in heart health and also saturating and delivering blood flow and oxygen to the heart. Okay? And so what you would look for, you look for the number 2.4. And I realize that doesn't probably mean anything to anybody, but what'll happen is if you go to the doctor, and actually you can go to just about any lab and you can get your own magnesium levels tested. I think there's a group of ladies in Tyler, they call it One Call, We Draw. They probably are the best ones to utilize. You don't even need a doctor. You can just call them up, and they'll check your magnesium levels for you. I think they're on their business card. It says, One Call, We Draw. Anyway, at least I remember that much. I don't remember their phone number, but I could look that up for you also. But if you use that lab service, she needs to have her magnesium levels tested. And so if it's below 2.4, then now we've got something that we can work on that helps get closer to trying to answer your question in that what can she do? Because magnesium, I'm not saying it's the same as the blood thinner Eliquis, but when you have optimal magnesium, what happens is you hold more oxygen in your blood. Your blood moves faster, and that's what you want. You want more oxygen delivery. Okay. Well, now, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
He does take magnesium potassium aspirate.
But how do we know what our magnesium levels are? And that's kind of the point I'm building toward. Even though a person's taking these, they may not be anywhere close to optimal. And, of course, there's a lot of ways to say this. Can I say it in reverse? What if her body has a much higher need for magnesium than what that supplement's supplying? If she has her magnesium levels tested, we can figure that out, because I have a feeling this lady that you're calling about, she's like an easy, easy sales pitch, and she goes, oh, you mean my magnesium is 1.9? Well, how can I improve that? Well, it may be that we have to switch forms of magnesium.
Yeah.
Okay, it can be as simple as that, but guess who wins? She does. And, of course, you do, too.
Okay. Well, listen, I'll let you go. By the way, I talked to you before, and I'm coming in to see you.
Well, great. I'm looking forward to helping you.
But anyway.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. Two or three more tidbits of information. There is a protein that's manufactured by the liver. It's called ferritin. As a general rule, as ferritin levels go up, the risk of a heart attack increases. Another way of saying this is when a woman is in the childbearing years, usually it's just about impossible for them to have a heart attack or a stroke. About the only way that you can cause a woman to have a stroke is to give her birth control pills or maybe a COVID-19 vaccine. I think I'm correct on both those issues. Just like if a 40-year-old woman shows up at the emergency room with a heart attack and a stroke, the ER doctor is going to quickly say, which birth control pill are you taking? Because that's just the horrible, rotten side effects of them. Anyway, and you know where I'm coming from. I don't want anybody to have a stroke. I don't want anybody to have a heart attack. I want you to be radiant and strong and feel amazing. But that's another thing that the lady should have tested is her ferritin levels. Because when a woman goes from the childbearing years where she, every 28 days on the money, she has a menstrual cycle, well, that's one of the ways that she can wash out some of the old stagnant blood in the body. But once a woman goes into menopause and she stops having her menstrual cycle, that's where you have all the heart attacks. I mean, it's just through the roof high. So hope that helps. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, sir. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you very much for your call.
Wonderful. You were talking about turkey tail mushrooms, and I'm wondering what should be a good dose. Should it be in tablets, or should we grow our own turkey tail?
All the above is yes. Now, my takeaway from that study that I just read about turkey tail causing less fatigue, and actually one of the markers they use to determine if a person's had a heart attack is measuring what's called creatine kinase. Turkey tail is the very substance that lowers that. So when creatine kinase goes up, that means there's more damage to the heart muscle, not what you want. But in the study, the big takeaway for me was they got great results on a low dose. They got just as good results as they did on a high dose. And usually it doesn't work that way. Usually when it comes to nutritional remedies or herbs, usually the higher dose works better than the lower dose. You kind of know what I mean on that?
Yes, sir.
That's kind of like if I said, how do you perform with one spoonful of water versus, you know, a half a gallon? Well, you're going to say, oh, my goodness, I do so much better with a half a gallon because it's closer to optimal. But you can get turkey tail easily in several forms, but probably the easiest one is just where they have it dried and put in a capsule.
Okay.
But it does not take much, according to this mouse study. Not that I can always compare a mouse to a human being, but, you know, I don't want to be put in a bucket of water and see how long I can swim before I drown.
Okay.
Maybe if I was on the Titanic, I'd have to figure out real quick. Anyway.
Amen. But also another question that I was prepared to ask you at the beginning was, on Monday in your class, you talked at the end about brushing teeth with, I think it was baking soda, and I forget the exact reason, and could maybe you explain that a little
bit? Oh, yeah, and I'm glad you're asking. I'm almost positive what I was after is, if you want to destroy your blood flow in the body, if you want to develop high blood pressure, you just have to do two things. Use Listerine mouthwash, or actually any mouthwash will do, because it just destroys your ability to manufacture what's called nitric oxide. But if you use a toothpaste that has fluoride, and you know, I've talked to many dentists about this, and I tell you, they look at me like I am totally nuts when I bring up the topic of using fluoridated toothpaste is one of the greatest ways to develop high blood pressure. And obviously, I don't have the studies right in front of me, or I'd quote from them more accurately, but I was just telling people at that talk on Monday that if you use toothpaste, it was made of like baking soda, maybe essential oils and like coconut oil, stuff like that. As long as it doesn't have fluoride, it's not going to cause your blood pressure to go through the roof high. But literally, they're showing that in the examination method, or doing research on real human beings, they already know if you want your blood pressure to go up, use mouthwash. Okay, so it ain't that healthy, is it? And then number two, if you really want to wreck your blood pressure, why don't you use a fluoridated toothpaste? So get toothpaste without fluoride.
Okay.
Check with your dentist first. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Or use baking soda for the toothpaste.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know how many people, that's the only toothpaste that they ever had growing up was baking soda. Did you grow up during the 50s?
Yes.
Did you have toothpaste to use growing up, or did you not have toothpaste?
Yeah, we did. My dad was in the military.
Okay. So a lot of the people that are listening right now, they distinctly remember that when they were kids, baking soda is really the only thing they had. So that wasn't really that long ago, back to 1927, was it?
just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, if I round that off, it's, you know, like 90 plus, give or take a few. Anyway, well, I hope that helps you. But yeah, that would be one of the reasons why baking soda. And can I go on a side topic? It's the same thing, but it's just a little bit different. That is one of the reasons why, if a person takes, say, a half a teaspoon or maybe one teaspoon of just plain Jane Arm & Hammer baking soda, how that can actually help improve their oxygen levels in their body. Now, I know this is a little bit much, but I remember in the class, there was a gentleman that was sitting on the back row. His name was Robert. Super, super nice guy. He was talking about cancer grows where there's a high acid environment. Well, I'm going, yeah, he's right. So if a person eats a lot of candy, that's high acid. If you drink soda pops, that's high acid. If you're eating processed junk food, that's high acid. So what would be alkaline? Well, that would be stuff like vegetables. Like if you said, I'm thinking about steaming some broccoli and kale today. Well, that'd be alkaline. But oxygen itself is maybe the most alkaline element in the universe. And so when the body is very, very low in oxygen, it's going to be more acidic. That is not ideal for healing and staying in good repair. And so baking soda, if you measure the pH, guess what it is? It's alkaline. In a roundabout way, baking soda has been shown to be one of the most beneficial treatments of all time. I can almost guarantee you right now, and I'm really just joking as I say this, but if you said, you know what, I think I'm going to eat an entire greasy lasagna for lunch today, all by myself. Well, you can't be shocked if later in the day you start having acid reflux, because you're going, oh my goodness, I think I overdid it. There was too much grease in there. I shouldn't have done all that. Well, what would put out all that acid fire in your stomach that's coming up your throat? Baking soda. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yes, sir. And you've just mentioned another question that I have for you. In the evenings, I never seem to get enough food. you mentioned
Well, there's one way around that. You've got to start the day with getting plenty of protein. And I'm kind of cutting to the chase. If you don't have enough protein to start your day, you're setting yourself up for craving more at the end of the day.
Okay.
So let me just ask a question, and I'm not being judgmental. I just want to find out. I'm here to help you. What do you have for breakfast?
Usually I skip it.
Well, you might try to change that then. There's always an opportunity here to say, okay, maybe I can do it differently and get a better result. So we're going to learn here. What if you had 4 eggs, you know, over easy or scrambled with cheese on them for breakfast? Let's find out now if all of a sudden you don't have a problem with craving food at night. And that's the one thing that I can look at over and over again. I can examine all these studies that come out, and I like doing that. And some of them I don't even understand, but a lot of them I do. I think most of them I can read and I can figure out for myself what it's talking about. Probably a good 90% of the time. Some of them I'm going, I don't even know what these words mean. What is the researcher doing? Impressing other people? But when we age, the older you get, the greater your need for protein is. Now, if I go to the store and I just examine older people that are barely moving, they're not getting protein in their shopping carts. They're getting all the Coca-Colas are surrounding the top, you know, rail of their, you've seen that before, haven't you? Where they put the six-pack of the Cokes on the rails.
4 6-packs.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly what I'm talking about. But they're eating too many carbohydrates. I just looked at a study a while ago before I came on the air, and it said the higher the carbohydrate intake at the end of the day, the worst mental performance of all time. Meaning, you're not going to do well on a test that has to do with cognitive function or memory or processing information or problem solving. So they were showing in the study that they were noticing much higher rates of dementia when the last meal of the day included a lot of carbohydrates. And I'm just saying, okay, something that converts into sugar. So protein is one of the things you have to get right if you want to turn the tables around for your body to heal. And that's really what your body, the tissues are made of. You're mainly made of amino acids. Well, I'm sorry, minus the water content of the body. So if you're ideally 70% water, I'm just saying everything else is mainly protein and fatty acids. You know, muscle, bone, stuff like that, organs, protein. But okay, without enough protein, you're just kind of setting yourself up where you're just going to crave everything in sight. There's just no way around it.
Well, let me tell you what my normal food is. I've been, because I've listened to my favorite doctor on Saturday mornings, and he talks often about intermittent fasting. Around lunchtime, I will have a couple of eggs with something such as asparagus and bacon bits and cheese in it.
Well, at the minimum, we got to double that. You're going to have to eat a minimum of 4 eggs instead of 2 if you want that to work.
Okay.
And that's not me jumping your case over that, but there's just not enough protein. A typical egg is going to be about 6.5, or is it 6.25 grams of protein. So if you had 4 eggs, that's 25 grams of protein. So you're going to have to, at the bare minimum, double the number of eggs to see if you have a better result.
Okay. And should I keep the vegetable in there, asparagus?
Oh, fine by me, yeah. Asparagus is great. You do grow your own along the fence lines, don't you?
Well, I had a few last year, and they seem to have died in the drought.
Oh, no. You mean you didn't have irrigation lines run along your fence lines?
Nope.
Well, I'm proud of you for trying to grow them. What'd you have for supper last night?
I helped out with the fish frying, so I had okay, fish with the sides that they had.
Did they have the fish fry at the church?
Yes.
Which town was it?
Well, I went up to Jacksonville.
You know what? I do remember when I left Jacksonville later yesterday, I could smell some fresh perch in the air.
I don't think there's perch.
Okay, different fish fry.
But it was good.
Well, it's always fun to help out, isn't it?
Amen.
I bet they loved having you there.
I hope so.
Are you kidding? Free manual labor cooking for us. way to go.
Yep. Well, thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. I hope you have a great day. You're welcome. Sir. I appreciate you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, if you want to join me on the radio, the number here at the station is 903-589-8507. Let me give that out one more time. I'll try to be slow. 903-589-8507. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Well, good morning. Good morning, sir. Well, I have a question. My sister has a trigger finger problem, and she knows what caused it, writing very small on labels in their jewelry company. So in the first knuckle behind the fingernail in the middle finger, that's where that knuckle locks up.
Yeah.
And she can do a finger guard at night. She doesn't like to. But that pain goes through the finger, through the palm, and into the thumb area. So she was wondering what to be done. I said, well, I'll call the expert.
So I'm sorry for laughing, but I'm trying to picture somebody using teeny tiny print on those tags on pieces of jewelry. She's probably like the expert at microscopic print technique.
Oh, it was something else, apparently.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so can I give you three or four different ideas, okay?
Sure. Okay.
All right. So if I say these things, just kind of take them as general statements. There's an element that is found in nature that I'm not really sure if I know how to describe it. I'm going to say it's found in the ocean. If you eat seafood, you're going to find that's a good source of iodine. If somebody said, what about kelp? What about dulse? Well, those are all superfoods from a long time ago because they tend to be really dense and packed with iodine. And so if I look at places on the planet, and I'm just going to choose the island of Okinawa, Japan, because that's the research I've looked at, they have almost no trigger fingers there.
Oh.
Maybe because they don't have any triggers. But no, I'm just joking about that. But they do have one of the higher intakes of iodine. So I do believe that I've seen a correlation between lower levels of iodine or... You know, there's a lot of ways I could say this, but somebody that's really intelligent like you, I'm just saying iodine is a tool or an element that's used by the body. And so what happens when you don't have all the tools you need to do the job? It just goes undone, right?
Yes.
And so I'm almost positive that way, way, way long time ago, the element iodine was named after the Greek goddess Iodes. And she was very famous for wearing purple. And the reason they called iodine, or they named iodine after the goddess Iodes, was because when they burned it in a hot flame like a Bunsen burner in the lab, it turned purple, purple smoke. I'd like to see that. I've never seen that before. So it may be that she has an iodine deficiency. And so there's three or four ways that we might can tackle this. Number one, if she starts supplementing her diet with iodine, I'm suggesting that may be something that her body could in turn use to counter the trigger finger or keep the tendons in better repair or prevent scar tissue or adhesions from the wear and tear. It'd be like somebody that has a job operating a jackhammer and all day long that's all they do is just hammer away at concrete. Well, you can't be shocked if those people don't develop carpal tunnel syndrome and just horrific pain in their arms and shoulders. I mean, that just literally just beats their hands to death, doesn't it? Well, she's kind of had stress based on the teeny tiny precise handwriting. So that's one thing that I would look at doing. And some people have successfully just used iodine where they just keep applying iodine to the area itself. So that's an easy one also. You know how you can buy iodine and just like apply it through the application? There's like a little plastic wand that comes in the bottle. Right. That's one way. The other one that I like, and nobody seems to like this one, but I know it works, is taking coconut oil and rubbing and massaging that tendon. But you do it, it's called, sometimes the technique is called transverse friction. I'm just going to try to make it sound simple. You take the tip of your thumb and you press into the most painful part of that joint where it hurts, and you start rubbing and massaging with coconut oil. Or another one is applying castor oil right at bedtime. You may have to wear a glove, but after you do those things, you've got to stretch those tendons out to try to break up any scar tissue adhesion. That's the part that's a little bit painful. But, you know, if you were here in front of me and you had a trigger finger, I would have no problem ripping yours apart. I mean, therapeutically helping massage is what I meant to say.
Okay.
The other thing that I like very much, there's an old technique. If I go to the store, I can go, you know where they sell Maybelline cosmetics?
Okay.
It's just one aisle over at Walmart. They sell, or they go to the health food store, but they sell what's called Indian healing clay. Now, that's a whole different ball of wax. I don't know how to explain it other than it works, but I am a firm believer in making mud packs of the Indian healing clay, and you can use apple cider vinegar. It could be something as simple as Bragg's apple cider vinegar. And you could start making a mud pack and applying it to that every day for about 20 minutes. Just let the mud dry and then wash it off and see if something starts to change for the better.
All right, that sounds good.
I can tell right now you're using teeny tiny print like your sister would on the jewelry. Is that correct?
Well, I'm not at her jewelry store too much, so.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
But those are some ideas right there, and see if over time it begins to change. But most likely she's developing some adhesions in that tendon sheath, and it just kind of locks up. But she can undo it, can't she?
Oh, yeah, she can.
Okay, those are the easiest ones to fix. When they're completely locked up, those are the ones that you have to go to a hand surgeon and have a surgical release.
Okay. Now, before you go, can I ask you another thing?
Yes, sir.
Take too much time.
I mean, this is you. I would do anything for you.
Okay.
Because I know you always have my back.
Well, I certainly do, I tell you. As I've told you, I have learned more out of your program than all I learned in my first degree in science, let me assure you.
Well, that's a high compliment. Thank you so much for your kind words.
On a hammer toe, I have a friend, and his wife, of course, is looking at surgery for that. And, of course, if you can avoid that, you'd like to.
Is it a pretty bad hammer toe?
Yes.
I mean, we were taught how to fix those in school back in the 80s, and it works, but it's not easy. What you have to do is you have to take a sheet of paper, put it on the floor, and you have to wad it up in a ball with your foot. And that's a way to retrain those muscles to make the hammer toe go away. Hard to do, but it works. You just have to do it long enough. Sometimes I can get people to walk barefooted and have them train them to dig their toes into the ground like they're trying to grab and pull something. And I've seen that become very helpful. But you do realize, I know you know this better than I do, we're just living in a completely different world than the way it used to be. It used to be like in 1907, people would walk on an average 19 to 20 miles a day, because that was just the normal amount of walking they did to take care of the farm work. I don't know anybody that walks 19 miles a day, do you?
No.
So they were probably a little bit stronger and probably a little bit more athletic. They could make their body obey them. But I think hammer toes, some of those are going to be because we're a little bit more sedentary than what we used to be.
Sure.
I know you won't believe what I'm saying, but I've heard rumors sometimes people sit down for 8 hours a day on Facebook.
Well, and I remember you saying sitting 8 hours a day is the equivalent of smoking one pack of cigarettes.
Man, it is. I mean, what does that tell you if that's just so damaging to the body to be that sedentary? You're thinking, I think I know what Dr. Morgan's telling me. I should get up and move.
Well, that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that is very helpful.
I hope it helps your sister a whole lot. Is she locally, or is she like in a different state?
No, she lives up in North Texas, north of Dallas.
Oh, so she's a northerner. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. We're trying to make her a southerner here.
You know what? If you could just get her to move like one or two counties down, then she could be a southerner.
That's right. Have to educate her, won't we?
Well, I think you have a good start on that. Well, give your sister my very, very best, and I wish her the best.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yes, thank you. Bye-bye. All right, there's time for another phone call. Here is the phone number of the radio station. This program is Health Essentials, 903-589-8507. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, and we appreciate you more than you know, I tell you what.
Oh, you're so kind to say that. Thank you. Well, I appreciate, you know what, I appreciate you equally. Sometimes I wonder, do they even want to hear what I have to say?
Absolutely. We do. We take notes every Saturday.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
I am taking hydrochlorothiazide for edema. What is a good thing to do for edema?
They did a study in Brazil. And it's the only one I've ever come across. And I know this is going to just strike you as weird and unusual, but they said, what could be used in place of hydrochlorothiazide as a diuretic to get rid of edema and swelling? And you know what they came up with?
What?
Horsetail.
Horsetail.
Yeah. I'm not calling anybody a horse's tail. I'm saying the actual, sometimes it's called organic horsetail.
Okay.
And you'll have to forgive me. I don't remember the exact dose because it's been a while since I read the article, but it was very reasonable. I mean, I walked away from it going, oh, this is like, what do you mean organic horsetail works better than hydrochlorothiazide? I thought, that's amazing. How did they figure that one out? But it was a study from Brazil. And you know what? And something I'm curious about, what do you do if you're a nation that doesn't have as much money to blow on expensive medications? You're going, I wonder if God has made something in nature that we can grow that will work just as good without all the horrific side effects. So, thus the horsetail.
Well, now would that be found at a like an herbal store?
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
Is it a tea? Is it going to be a capsule? What is it?
I hate to tell you this, but I don't remember what the delivery system was, whether it was a tea or a tablet or a capsule, because I'm open to the idea because I've seen horsetail tea. And let me back up one spot here. It may be that it goes by the name of organic horsetail extract. Now, I don't have a computer up here. If I had my laptop and I was plugged into Wi-Fi, I could figure it out real fast for you. But you might even, as when you get off, you might look at, just type in the idea, research on organic horsetail as a diuretic.
Okay.
And then see what you come up with. But that study that I'm referring to, it came from Brazil. And I don't think it was done that long ago. I just don't remember when.
Okay. I want to... Now, is it not good to take the hydrochlorothiazide?
Well, can I tell you some of the side effects?
Yes.
I'm giving you my word here. I'm not trying to just attack every drug that I come across, but you know as well as I do, I really think that every human being that has heard this program before, they're probably going to agree, like, okay, if you take a pharmaceutical drug, there's the potential that you could have a whole lot of side effects from it. Would you agree with that statement?
Okay. Absolutely.
And so when you start taking a HTZ drug, like you're talking about, you will start losing some of your electrolytes or your minerals. That's where, if you went to the blood test, so there's a standard blood test that just about every doctor or nurse or PA was going to order if you come in for an exam. It's called a comprehensive metabolic panel.
Uh-huh.
And one of the markers on there is called anion gap. And if yours is low, that means you're losing minerals.
Okay.
But I think it's hard on the kidneys, potentially.
Yeah.
I mean, you understand that human beings come in every shape and size and variety and every flavor, right? So some people are stronger than others. Some people have weaknesses. I know this is not a shock to you, but there's a whole lot of people out there. They're trying to wreck their kidneys as rapidly as possible by their lifestyle. And I think you've heard me talk about that in the past before, but you cannot force a person to give up 20 Red Bulls a day or smoking, you know, two packs of cigarettes. You can't do it. I mean, I'd love to. If I was successful at just telling a person to stop smoking cigarettes and drinking a boatload of beer and alcohol and abusing their body with junk food, I would have gotten my father to listen to me. You understand how hard that is. Can't be done.
I do.
Yes, ma'am. I know. I wasn't saying that. But anyway. So there's some people, they're in such rough shape, they're hard to help because they don't have the mentality or the desire to take care of themselves. But you do. So if you look into organic horsetail, can I tell you some other things that I would look into if it were me?
Absolutely.
All right. Now, I know what I'm fixing to say. You're not going to like it. But because I love you and care about you, I'm going to tell you the truth, but I need you to agree with me before I tell you what is that you'll do it. Just say, I agree to whatever you say, Dr. Morgan. I'll do it.
I will agree to whatever you say. I'll do it.
Now, that's what I call faith. Okay. Dark chocolate has been shown to be extremely beneficial to improve blood flow and to lower blood pressure. So, as your physician, I'm demanding that you start eating some dark chocolate every day.
That breaks my heart.
I know, ma'am. Don't have a nervous breakdown on the radio with me. I know that's too hard to handle, but I need you to prayerfully consider that. They probably have a dark chocolate bar with your name on it at the store right now, just waiting to be purchased. A lady was telling me this week about a brand of a chocolate bar that they just come wrapped in individual servings. I'm going, that's easy. All you got to do is pry it open and eat it. What was I going to go? Okay, next, and this really is very, very precise. I don't even know how anybody could call up and say, this is quackery and voodoo. You can't do this. Are you kidding? The research is too overwhelmingly great. I was raised eating beets and rutabagas, and do you know what kohlrabi is?
I'm not really that familiar with
parsnips.
The beets, the rutabagas.
Yeah, that's just the way we used to eat growing up. So I didn't know that if your mother made fresh rutabagas and smashed them up like mashed potatoes, you had an option to say, no, I don't want that.
Exactly.
You couldn't say, can I? Oh, great mother, I know you've worked hard slaving in the kitchen, but I'd like some Fruity Pebbles or some Count Chocula. Nope, nobody even knows what I'm talking about. They probably don't even have those cereals anymore. I bet they have Fruit Loops. There's plenty of those in the world. I mean, there's plenty of boxes at the grocery store, is what I meant to say. So beets are one of the greatest sources of all time of what are called dietary nitrates.
Okay.
And that's still the same message that I told the gentleman that called previously about fluoridated toothpaste has been shown to be hard on the blood vessels, just like Listerine mouthwash has, or any mouthwash. That stuff's garbage. You want to wreck your health, use mouthwash and fluoridated toothpaste. I don't know how stronger I could say it than that. And you know what? Some people are going to consider what I'm saying and look it up and find out, oh, he's right. And other people will not. Well, I can't do anything about the other group. And so eating beets or taking beets every day is one of the greatest ways of all time to greatly improve blood flow and oxygenation. Do you believe the Bible verse that says that the life is in the blood? Do you believe that?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Do you know what color beets are?
Yes, they're that beautiful kind of reddish color.
What does that remind you of?
The blood, right.
There you go. And so the nitrates that are found in beets, they're one of the rare substances in nature that really help put you in a better place as far as greatly improving your blood flow or your oxygen delivery. That could actually be the theme for today's program. What do we do to enhance oxygen delivery? Because your edema goes away if we can just improve blood flow and oxygen-rich nutrients to the legs and to the kidneys.
Okay. You talk about the baking soda in the mornings. Is that also good for the kidneys?
Yes, ma'am, it is. Absolutely, yes. That's just a brilliant thing you just brought up. I wish I'd been smart enough to think of that one. That's really what you want. If you take anywhere between a half to maybe, you know, maybe one teaspoon. And the thing of it is, that's really not much, is it?
No, it is.
You tell me, how much does a half a teaspoon of baking soda cost?
Not much, and you can just put it in some water and drink it.
That's the spirit. Thank you for your world-class attitude on taking care of yourself. But I'm convinced that baking soda is one of the greatest elements found in nature to help the kidneys. It really is good. I really think it helps the oxygen levels, too. But it helps kick out some of the acid of the body. It makes your body slightly alkaline. That's really the optimal pH of your blood. When I was in school, we had to measure pH all the time. I had a teacher named Dr. V.L. Shaladia. The guy would crack me on the back of the head with a ruler if I didn't do the right thing. It was, I mean, he was one rough instructor. But, you know, after I got out of school, I thought he really was doing what was best for us. He just didn't want us making mistakes. He wanted us to do the job right. He wanted us to practice excellence. But, man, he was one rough cat. But baking soda is the bomb when it comes to helping your body.
That is great. Thank you so much for the information. And the iron gap test, check on that.
Well, yeah, you can just have what's called a comprehensive metabolic panel. And they will do a good job of measuring how efficient the kidneys are working. They have that little acronym, GFR, that stands for glomerular filtration rate. And when that's the number 100, that means your kidneys are working at 100% efficiency. That's what you want. But if they're working at 59, that means the kidneys are only working at 59%. That's actually called stage 1 renal or kidney failure. You don't want that.
Okay, that is a big help. Thank you so much.
Yes, and can I compliment you on one thing for not having a nervous breakdown when I tried to force you into eating chocolate as a therapeutic regimen to help your body heal?
Well, I'm going to try to get some of that, and I will try to force myself to enjoy that.
Thank you very much. That's the spirit. I appreciate that. Have a good day, ma'am. You too. Bye-bye. Okay, I think I have 1 minute left. I don't know if that's enough time for a phone call or not. Great. That's probably not enough time. I'm so sorry. Okay. So let's go backwards just for a second and talk about beets just a little bit longer. A lot of people just absolutely can't stand the taste of beets. And, you know, and I get where they're coming from because there's a compound or a molecule that's found in beets. It's called geomycin. And you know what it smells like and tastes like? It tastes like dirt. And so you have a high concentration of this compound that's found in beets. And a lot of people are just repulsed by it because every time they put it in their mouth, they go, this is dirt. Now, you got to get over that. If you want to take good care of yourself, I just would strongly recommend that one of the ways that we start to turn a person's health around, and I'm just kind of saying this generally because let's just kind of give some examples. You've got a guy that's had 35 different surgeries. He's humped over. He's lost so much of his muscle mass. He talks very, very slowly. He just is barely moving and dragging. Well, that's a classic indication that he doesn't have much oxygen. He probably, or she probably, if I used a female as the example, she probably needs like a CPAP, a BiPAP, an oxygen tank just to keep them, their eyes open. Well, so what do you do if you don't know what to do? Well, how can you go wrong? By trying to improve more oxygen delivery to the human body. That's a starting point. Because if you can do that, then you can start stimulating energy production. Remember, the food that you eat, you take the oxygen that you breathe in, and it goes to the mitochondria and produces energy. So if all you're doing is just waiting for your next drug or your next surgery, and you're not doing anything to correct your oxygen delivery, well, I would say most likely that's not going to pan out. And, you know, and I've heard stories of people having so many surgeries, but they just somehow or another, that's what they do. They don't necessarily get better. I would rather run toward the root cause and try to help create the right circumstances or situation to get more oxygen delivery. That's usually a home run. I've enjoyed being with you today. This is Roy Morgan. This program is Health Essentials. You're listening to KBJS FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.